An important development in Native politics was the emergence of organized youth groups, Native students in Fairbanks, Bethel, and at Mount Edgecombe. These sometimes militant junior delegates demanded a voice in Native political issues, recognition by the AFN as viable organizations, and appreciation for their difficulties in obtaining high school and university educations away from their home communities. Kathy Itta of the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students presented her group to the convention.
This time I'll call on the representatives of the mini AFN group from Mount Edgecombe. We have a delegation with us today. Is there a spokesman here?
Thank you, Mr. Wright. On behalf of the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students, also known as the mini AFN, I would like to thank the AFN Board of Directors for giving the Mount Edgecombe students the opportunity to present a report in this historic AFN convention. Mount Edgecombe High School has an enrollment of approximately 500 students. Many of these students travel hundreds of miles to seek a high school education. Last year, the Rural Alaska Community Action Program began implementing a program at the Mount Edgecombe because the needs of the students were recognized by that board. The students were funded for $6,700 by OEO through Rural CAP. Gordon Jackson, the executive director of CCAP, met with the students at Mount Edgecombe to draw up a program in which the $6,700 could be utilized. As a result of this meeting, the organization called the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students was established. If this program year is successful, we will be funded again for $6,700 in January. The structure of the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students is similar to that of the AFN, but we are following the 12 regional concept. Our main objective is to make the student body more knowledgeable about Native affairs. In the last meeting of the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students Board of Directors, three resolutions were drawn up by the board and adopted to present to the AFN convention. Betty Huntington will read the resolutions.
Resolution number one, submitted by Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students Board of Directors. Whereas the one Mount Edgecombe High School educates 500 to 600 students from all regions of the state of Alaska, and whereas the one Mount Edgecombe High School students are Eskimo, Indian, and Aleut. Whereas a gap exists between the Mount Edgecombe Native students and the rest of the Native people in their communities and regions regarding Native affairs, therefore be it resolved that the Alaska Federation of Natives in convention assembled in Fairbanks, Alaska on October 8th, 9th, and 10th, 1971, place a members from the Board of Directors of the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students on the AFN Board of Directors. This resolution unanimously adopted by the Board of Directors of the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students on October 5th, 1971. Resolution number two, submitted by the MEFN. Whereas the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students Board of Directors seeks to make the student body more knowledgeable of state affairs, AFN, and other Native organization. Whereas the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students Board of Directors seeks to encourage more student leadership. Whereas the MEFN Board of Directors seeks to discourage the high rate of student dropout within the Mount Edgecombe High School, and whereas the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students Board of Directors seeks to preserve the Native cultural value of the students, whereas the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students Board of Directors seeks to improve the Mount Edgecombe High School, therefore it be resolved that the Alaska Federation of Natives assembled in Fairbanks, Alaska on October 8th, 9th, and 10th, 1971, assists the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students to the fullest extent in their efforts to achieve their goals. This resolution is unanimously adopted by the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students Board of Directors on October 5th, 1971. Resolution number three, submitted by the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students Board of Directors. Whereas the Mount Edgecombe High School has a new school board, whereas the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students feel that there should be a representation from the Mount Edgecombe School Board of the Alaska Federation Board of on the Alaska Federation of Native Board of Education. Therefore, it be resolved that the AFN Convention assembled in Fairbanks, Alaska, October 8th, 9th, and 10th, 1971, seat a member from the Mount Edgecombe School Board on their Board of Education. This resolution unanimously adopted by the Board of Directors of the Mount Edgecombe Federation of Native Students on October 5th, 1971.
We felt that there was no need to elaborate upon the needs of the Mount Edgecombe High School since this has been discussed in many of the AFN Board of Directors meetings. But at this time, we'd like to invite the AFN Board of Directors to hold their next Board of Directors meeting at Mount Edgecombe.
Thank you very much, many AFN, and I'm sure that the convention assembled will honor your requests and take action at the appropriate time. We thank you very much for participating and bringing your message to us.
My name is Dana Naughty, and I'm the junior delegate of Bethel High. What the students of Bethel would like to see is the students should have a hand in interviewing, recommending, or even hiring teachers. If this were done, we believe that the students would benefit far more. We believe that a panel consisting of students to sit with the State Board of Education in getting these teachers at present, to my knowledge, the teachers are hired without the knowledge of the students they are to be associated with. The reason we brought this up is we are looking for your support in making this possible for the benefit of the students and your future leaders. We are here representing the student body and feel it is my privilege to tell you that we are 100% behind the native land claims. Though not nearly as well versed on the subject, we, the students of Bethel High, have the spirit and the determination to help in whatever way we can to get a just settlement. And if this isn't possible, what we can't have today, I'm sure our sons and daughters can have tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Naughty, and you delegates from the Bethel area. And I hope that young people from other regions will join us in the same way and show this kind of enthusiasm. If we have this kind of enthusiasm amongst the young people, there's no question about what the future holds for all Native people in this state.
The presentation by Convention Sergeant-at-Arms Frank Degnan of Unalakleet was somewhat unusual, though he, like other delegates, spoke on impending land claims or rights and the need for Native unity.
Ladies and gentlemen, let not thy hearts be troubled. Determination without termination. A fair and a just settlement. Who said that? And what is he going to try to do to you now? Uncle Sam has two hands. And you know what it says in the good book? Let not thy right hand see what the left hand is doing. What does that mean? That means a lot. You've been writing bills. The Senate has a bill. The House has a bill. You have per capita. You have regions. You have 12 regions. And why do you have 12 regions? We didn't have that when we first organized. We're united as one. But do you know that each region has his own problems. What is a fair and a just settlement, in your way of thinking? We made a decision back in 1946 when the President of the United States made proclamation that all Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts must file suit now forever after shut up. We're still around, and we made the decision. In my way of thinking, we made a decision which is fair and just to us, and also to you. All we need is a title to the cockeyed claim, then we pay all the cockeyed bills. What are we going to do? We're going to sit here and wait and have somebody tell us that this bill is the just and an honest bill when you know it isn't? You were told that the Indians took them 50 years to get that lake. I don't know what color it was, probably blue. They got it after 50 years. But do you know what's happened? The Alaska Federation natives was in there to help them. You're darn right. Darn right, sir, President. If you want a fair and a just settlement, let's go to all regions. The North Slope has its problems. Their problems. And they're working on them. They're getting action. Maybe you like it and maybe you don't, but they're working. They're working for a fair and a just settlement. We in our region, we started a long time ago, 1946. We figured we not only, you want land claims. I want submerged lands. Do you know when I was born and I was told that God made us? And I went to ask my mother, where did I come from? She said, you come from the sea. I says, I did. I says, what am I? She says, you're a crab. I says, I am? She says, you was. I got you from the sea. When you was in my womb, he says, you were sure a tough crab. But when I was born in July. I asked my mother, when was I born? Oh, she says, you was born in a dog barn on grass. He says, you were so small, I don't think you weighed 2 pounds. Nobody thought you'd live. I says, when was that? He says, when the first boat got in and it blew a whistle. When was that? That was back in 1901. Yeah, I'm here. And I know what a fair and just settlement is. I'm sure you do too, but you're a little bit confused. You're putting it on paper and you're letting somebody down there in Congress tell you what you're going to get, what you're going to do with it, how much you're going to get, but they're waiting for your answer. You've got to be united for the things that you want for this generation and the next generation. This is the time. This is the hour of decision. You're going to make the decision. And you better be unified. Let's all get together, work for our brother. This don't mean just the Eskimos, Indians, others. It concerns all of you, each and every one of you. Do you know they had a problem in Garden of Eden? They even kicked them out of there. There was only 2 people. When you talk about population explosion, we have 3 billion people today. 20 years from now, you'll have 6 billion. We want a title to our land. We want the minerals on the land, in the sea, in the air. There's minerals in the air.
Thank you, Frank. Willie Hensley?
I think we're all composing our speeches as we give them. I'm not sure if we're trying to reach a consensus on what to do about the predicament we're in terms of our land settlement in Congress, but there's some obvious facts that we are faced with, and that is that we have 2 bills, neither of which are acceptable at this point to the Native people. And we have some attacks from certain lobbying groups that would hinder what we see as a decent settlement. And I think Mr. Wright has outlined some of the very real problems that we see in both versions of the bill. And I don't have to specify them for you. They are in his report that is printed. But I think that there are some very obvious deficiencies. And one of these I'm not sure of the status of. As I left D.C. about 10 days ago, my understanding was that anybody under the Senate version who opted to have or to keep an allotment that of 6,000 that have been filed would thereby relinquish his right to participate in the financial settlement. Now, that has not been clarified to me, and I don't know if it has been to you, but I think that's a very obviously a blackmail provision to try to prevent us from acquiring individual lands that we utilize to this day. Furthermore, I understand that there's a provision to allow public right-of-way throughout any lands that are selected by the Native groups. And my understanding was that we were in the process of obtaining fee title lands. And if I own land in fee title, that means I control that land. And if you want to go through that land with a pipeline, a road, an airport, you come and talk to me. Well, what should be the difference between fee title for a white man and fee title for a Native group? I don't know that there should be any. Furthermore, there are certain reservations that are not given the option of retaining their reservation. And if these reservations would retain more lands than they would otherwise get under the land settlement, should be able to retain them. Furthermore, I think a key element is our effort to obtain regional organizations with powers to control their own destiny. That is, to be able to control lands and funds. I think we're in the process now of developing viable organizations, and I think that after having observed not only the state but the federal agencies attempt to do things in the bush, I think that these regions understand their problems and can handle them much better. I hesitated to discuss the suit by the Arctic Slope because I represent that region in the Senate, also the Northwest Alaska Native Association, and the Bering Straits area. I'm sure that this is going to be under discussion. We have had comments by it from some of our delegation. I really think perhaps that it's been overplayed to some extent, but even at this stage, Charlie, having discussed it with you and others, I have yet to find a substantial reason for it that would press a legislative settlement. And I think generally our view has been, or at least the consensus has been, that our as a suit has been used as a strategic tool to attempt to get a legislative solution of this issue, because we all know that litigation will take a long time. Litigation will not result in any land. Litigation will not result in any land title granted. We have the situation of the Tlingit Haida, where they litigated for years. They received a pittance for 20 million acres. They have judicially determined Indian title to 2.6 million acres that they cannot use. They would have to go through Congress in order to get the right to lease it or to utilize it for any purpose. And I think in terms of the rest of the regions of the state outside of the Arctic slope, it seems to me that our only real hope in terms of obtaining for these regions land and capital to work with is the legislative route. We are not all blessed with the fact that $900 million has come out of one region. And it seems to me that this may be worthy of some discussion. I do understand the very real fears that every Native person has of losing his birthright, of losing the land that he has lived on for thousands of years. But I think we have all recognized that we are all in it, all in this battle together, and that whatever happens in terms of a judicial decisions affects every other region of the state and every other regional association that has made a filing. And for this reason, I believe that our full efforts should be directed toward the most favorable bill that we can get for every region in the state. And also, I have some thoughts about the conservationist effort. And just as Attorney General Clark says, we should be in the same boat fighting for the same objectives. I have traveled on the East, I just returned from the East, and I can never get back fast enough to enjoy Kotzebue and the air in Alaska. It's a terrible disaster out there, and we all know that we want to prevent that from happening in Alaska. However, one of the things that Don Wright has attempted to point out amongst the conservationist groups, and I'm very pleased that they have come to the forefront in this, in the United States, but I think that they must consider the fact that we also have the need to survive. We have to have the ability and the right to hunt and fish without fear of losing that right. And we do not feel that they should take a position that would be detrimental to people who have a right to that land from getting that light, that land within a reasonable amount of time. And while it would seem that since Alaska is the last great wide open space, that it is an excellent target for preserving, and were it not for the fact that we have people with particular kinds of needs in the state, it would be great to retain it in that fashion. But Alaska cannot survive as we are now. Or at least we have to have people with a decent standard of living. And I'm certainly not advocating an unplanned use of our natural resources. because we have seen most of the natural resources of the United States dissipated and granted away. And I think a case in point is the mineral land laws of this state and of this country, none of which have been even, no proposed changes have been even recommended by the Public Land Law Review Commission to prevent a serious dissipation of the mineral resources of the country. However, it seems to me that we're either going to have to sink or swim from here on, because the, as I see it, the potential of an erosion of our position is very great if we don't get a settlement within this Congress. I don't think we should risk the possibilities of serious delay that carries on through the presidential elections and a lengthy period for the next Congress to organize. I also feel that the pressures by the industrialists, by the financiers, by the labor unions, by the state of Alaska are going to be great to develop the natural resources, to try to get the pipeline built. And naturally, our position has been that nothing should take place on the public, so-called public lands, until we get a land claim settlement. And I don't think there's anyone here who would like to see suit after suit filed, money spent on court costs, and we are the least of the ones that can afford lengthy court battles. The oil companies, the state, they have the resources to carry on litigation, and we don't. And while it's sometimes expected that we might act unreasonably, that is the Native people, I think the very fact that we have moved from 1966, you know, from nothing, you know, to the point where we were on the verge of obtaining a perhaps $1 billion settlement, be 40 to 60 million acres of land is nothing short of fantastic when we didn't have penny one to begin with. And I think part of that has been due to the fact that we have always known pretty much where we wanted to go. We weren't strictured by the past. We didn't know our limits. We had a combination of circumstances that allowed us to move into a position of pretty much determining the kind of legislation what we'd like, that we'd like to see and that we feel that we can live with. And I think most of the people that have anything to do with that are here in the audience, and you know who you are. But when I recall back in about 66 or 7 when Secretary Udall was recommending about 50,000 acres of trust land. He was recommending that 1867 be the date of taking, that is $7.5 million, that we let Attorney General Boyko go to court for us on behalf of the natives and see what he can get for us, to the point where he recommended $180 million. Hickel came along with $500 million. Few million acres of land, and finally 40 million acres and $1 billion. And I think all that has been because we have taken a straightforward position, maybe emotional at times, but at least credible. And I think that those chambers of commerce types who we have to live with and deal with, they can't recognize that this is a poor time of the season to attempt to throttle a piece of legislation that has had input from every major source, from the administration to both houses of Congress, to the state, to the native people, I think that's a rather unreasonable position to take. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hensley.